Hey, Rachel.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well. This interview, I want to say, is a couple of months late.
Yes.
So October, we met at Pete's Candy Shop, or Candy Store. I always forget if it's shop or store. Mm-hmm. At Shana's thing. Mm-hmm. And that's always an awesome time. But now we're here, finally.
Now we're here.
There's a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about.
Yes.
The first being your song that you're releasing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about where Play Pretend originated.
Yeah, well, I pretty much had the idea about 2 years ago now. I remember it was in the winter. It was like November of 2021, maybe. And I was playing around kind of with this dropped D tuning. And I think at the time I felt just frustrated, I think. Even though, you know, I was fairly new to music at the time. And I think I was just frustrated with the way that, you know, in society, the way that we have to present sometimes is this picture perfect image. And I think I was just feeling really down, and I was thinking, like, why are we not able to freely express all the grief and sadness and fear and anxiety that we experience? And I think especially with social media and stuff today, it's this very picture perfect representation of what is actually going on. And I think I was also kind of experiencing things through others in my life. And, you know, seeing what they were going through and then having to present a certain way to other people. And I think I was just really frustrated with this idea that we have to be one way in public and one way in private. And so, you know, this idea of just faking it till you make it, I kind of wanted to turn that into a song idea. So it's a very long-winded explanation for where I was coming from, but that's sort of what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in society, it's a little ridiculous that we have to like put on a face out in public and, not be our true authentic self all the time. I don't even think I intro'd you, which is crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We can intro you.
I'm just going to cut this clip. But we're here with Rachel Rose.
Yes, hello.
Big fan of hers. We did meet in Pete's Candy Shop or Candy Store. But no, she's incredibly talented. You're from Connecticut.
Yes.
And you launched your career in Texas.
Yes, yep. I ended up going to school in Texas. I was a psychology and business major, but I ended up, I mean, Austin is one of the live music capitals of the world, so I ended up spending most of my time doing music there. So
nice.
Yeah.
I went to Austin in September of last year, actually, with a bunch of my friends. It was a great time. You ever go to Lake Travis?
Of course, yes.
It's the best.
You've got Barton Springs. That's my favorite.
I
recommend all the spots.
How many bars did you go to?
Time there?
Because we were at Buford's basically the entire time.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's different, like, segments of my life for bars that I've attended.
Okay.
So, like, I'm probably incriminating myself, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Because
we can skip over it. I'll tell you a story.
So, yeah, I would say, like, my earlier 21 years, you know, I was definitely hanging around Six, like Dirty Six.
Okay.
And stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it was East for sure, like East Austin, like Rainy was really big too, like my senior year. There are too many to count, mm-hmm. but they're all really great. So,
yeah.
You know, even the divey ones.
Yeah, we went to, what street is Unbarleavable on?
That's Rainy.
That's Rainy.
Yeah.
So we were there. Of course, I have a video of me going down the slide.
It's so much
fun.
Because
who doesn't?
It's so much fun, yeah. I love those bars.
That was a really good time.
I spent my 21st birthday at Maggie Mae's. It was like a very,
okay.
very quick actual birthday because I, unfortunately, you know, was way past the point of being coherent, you know. And I was the last person out of my friends to turn 21, so everybody was like, yeah, you like it was this obliterated. Whole big, yeah. So it was like everybody was in on me turning 21, and I get to the bar and I maybe spend like 15 minutes there, and then I had to go home. But you know, it was my first time being at Maggie Mae's, being 21. You know, so,
that's good. So when did you make the move from Austin to New York City?
So I graduated in 2018 and I moved pretty much immediately after. I got a job at a music business company. It was in distribution. So I started working like pretty soon after I graduated. So like end of 2018, probably I moved like September-ish.
Okay. Very nice. I was going to ask you, being in the city, and there was a reel that you posted not too long ago. It was during the hockey season. I'm a huge hockey fan. How did you end up singing the national anthem at a New York Ranger game?
Yeah, that was like a crazy, crazy experience. So one of my really good friends, he does a lot of the booking sort of for MSG and all the games there, he does the Knicks and the Rangers and stuff like that. And so we had done the Tiny Desk video together. I'm a huge fan of his name is Sean. He's like an amazing string like arranger performer, like probably any of like the top records that you listen to that have strings, it's probably got him in it. He's amazing. And he was in the video and he ended up showing it to a friend of his who was also responsible for booking the talent for the national anthem at MSG. And she was like, I love the video, like would you be down to sing the national anthem? And I was like, yeah, but I had to do like an audition or like a trial. So I think it must have been like a Thursday, and I was actually visiting my grandparents, and Sean texted me and was like, do you think you can send like a video of you singing the national anthem? And I'm like hanging out with my grandparents and I'm like, yeah, definitely. And I'm like, excuse me, just hold on one second. And I like go into their guest room and I'm like doing takes of like the national anthem in their room. And it's hard too, because you have to do it a cappella and they require it under a certain time.
Okay.
So you kind of got to keep it like snappy.
That makes sense.
So I was like doing, you know, take after take, and finally, like, you know, they were like, we love it. And I think I was in there on Tuesday. So it was like really a very quick turnaround. But I feel like that's how funny. It goes. You know, you just have to be like prepared for when the time comes, you know, you never really know. But yeah, it was amazing. I pretty much forget the whole experience. I think I blacked out, but it was really cool. And I, yeah, it was an insane experience.
Did they let you stay for the game?
They did. We got some dinner coupons, which is great. I'm pretty sure I had a burger of some sort. And then, yeah, I stayed and I watched the game, which was really fun. Couldn't tell you who won. I completely forgot.
That was
everything.
My next question.
Nope. I feel like it was the Rangers, probably.
Probably. They were on
a
hell of a run this
year.
It
was a good luck day, maybe, you know.
Yeah. So I saw that and I was like, how? How in the world? So I was curious as to how that process was. What about Fallon?
Yeah, that one was also really crazy, too. So I had actually gotten an email from one of their booking reps. Like, it also was in the summer of 2022. And, you know, they had asked me if I could audition. And I think they had found me through Instagram or something like that, through mutuals. Because I had a couple of friends who've also been on, like, the Battle of the Instant Songwriters, like that segment. So I ended up auditioning. I sent in my tapes and they ended up like not going with me for that segment. And so like all this time passes by, and then it's October of 2023, so like a little over a year from when I auditioned. And they reached out to me and they were like, do you think you can come in like tomorrow to for the taping? And like, I work at a restaurant, so I'm like texting ferociously in our group chat being like, can somebody please, for the love of God, like pick up my shift tomorrow, because like I just had something pop up that is insane. And one of my friends ended up picking up my shift, and then I literally went in the next day, and it was a full day taping, and yeah, it was crazy. It was really crazy.
Did you get to meet Jimmy before the show?
I didn't. It was
that's
a very
gotta be nuts.
It was a very, yeah, it was like we met him, you know, like right there as we were doing
that's
it.
That's so crazy.
And you know, it was like such a stressful experience, because, you know, writing something good and then writing like under the clock, you know, that was one thing. And I remember, you know, going up there and it was all a blur, and I get done and I'm like such a like raging perfectionist in like good and bad ways, but in this way, like it took a turn for the worst, and I was like, I lost. And I was, you know, I like called my mom and I was like, I lost. And, you know, my dad called me and he was like, so like, how'd it go? And I was like, I lost, like I was horrible, like everybody hated me, all this stuff. And he was like, what are you talking about? I saw it. It was amazing. So he went and waited in line for the live taping.
Oh,
so he
nice.
Ended up like being in there and he saw it and he was like, you need to relax. Like it was good. You did a great job. Like,
I think
it's
you got
not
robbed.
Even about that.
For what it's worth, they gave him a prompt. And if you haven't watched the segment, go and watch it. I'll link it. It was Battle of the Songwriters. That's correct. That's
yes.
the name of it.
Yes.
It was you and I forget the other guy's name. But she got a prompt for an Airbnb being haunted. And I thought that was a really cool concept. You nailed it. And because of the times, you have to bring up Taylor Swift in any moment that you can.
Yes.
So he got, what was it, Kelsey, Taylor, and Me Make Three.
Yes.
So
it was very cheeky. It was fun. Yeah. And honestly, he's an amazing singer-songwriter, and I was like talking to him backstage before the show, and I was like, how did they find you? And he's like, I play at Skinny Dennis a lot, and one of the booking agents like went to Skinny Dennis on the night that he was performing, and she was like, we love your sound, we love everything, you know. So it was a very, you know, well-matched competition. But it was, yeah, it was just amazing to even see that experience and, you know, be behind the scenes of that. Yeah. And like Hayley Williams was backstage.
No,
I remember
way.
Like, I was just like walking by her and I was like, I love you. And she was like, great job. And I was like, oh my God.
Paramore performed that night.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if she performed, but I think she spoke.
She's, I need to tell you this right now, she's one of my favorite people to ever exist.
Yeah, she's incredible.
I'm surprised I don't have Paramore on my wall right now. One of my favorite bands ever. Hearing that, I'm like, of course she was a good person.
Yes, she's amazing. She's also really, really short. I was like, wow. Like, I mean, she's adorable, like, beautiful person, but I, you know, like when you see like internet people, you think they're larger than life.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my God, she must be like 5'3" or 5'4". Like, she's tiny.
Yeah, I think you were robbed. And that's not my bias. I genuinely think you wrote the better song. But the other guy did do great. With what he was given, he could have went for like really, really cheesy stuff, but he dialed it in and found a sweet spot.
Yeah, he did great. And like, he's a very, you know, like folky singer songwriter guy, so I think he really like took what he did. And you know, I truthfully don't know how much he knows about, I mean, I don't know that much about Taylor Swift other than, you know, what I see on Instagram every day. But like, I think he did great with the prompt. So
yeah,
no, you know, no hard feelings. It was all really fun, and he was super nice, and it was all, you know, it's all good. Yeah.
I think he went for more of like a Bob Dylan feel.
He did. He was like, Yeah, it was very, I mean, I thought it was just a really nice song. And I like his voice, too. Mm. So I think Jimmy was really digging it, which I understand. So it was good. Yeah.
He's also a big Bob Dylan guy.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's really funny. I know you're putting out Play Pretend, but I need to hear the backstory behind Remember Me. And what was his name?
Gary.
Gary, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so Remember Me was the last song that I put out last year. It's like, I think early December. Yeah. And basically, you know, I always like to tell this story at my shows because I think it resonates with a lot of people in some way. But the story behind this song was basically, I had a professor, when I was at school in Texas. And he was really the first person to take me in kind of as a mentor and just to guide me along my musical journey. And, in, you know, high school and before, I felt really shy and I wasn't really doing music. Like, I sort of did it secretly in my house. Like, I recorded all these covers on photo booth and like never posted them. And I really had such a love for music, but I had decided going into college that I was gonna, you know, pursue something else and just have music on the side. And he really brought me in and was like, you know, you can do music if you want to, if you really want to pursue this and put the work into this. And in the 4 years that I went to school there, he just became really, really close. Like, he was just, and he also too, like, he's an older guy, but he has just this boyish energy about him that is so charming and charismatic. And like, he would walk into a room and just everything would really light up around him. And he was just a very special person. And when I graduated school, we kept in touch and we always texted and called. But, you know, in the years since I'd graduated, I noticed a lot of changes with him and the way that he was communicating. And I had found out from his wife, I believe a year or two after I graduated, that he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. And just, you know, the nature of our relationship inevitably changed. And he was still, you know, that charismatic person, but, you know, the memories were gone. And it was so strange because I went to go visit him in Texas and seeing him and his physicality be the same. Like, his physical appearance was the same, but, you know, he was not the same person. Mm. And I really wanted to write a song just to remember him and to express this idea of, you know, somebody or anybody in your life not being there the way that you want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really sweet. I think people have communicated to me after shows, like, whether, you know, it's a loved one passing or, you know, somebody else who has a similar experience with someone in their family who has Alzheimer's or, you know, anything else. People have, I think, really resonated with it. And yeah, so it's been sweet to hear how people connect with it. 'Cause that's all I really wanted, was to write a song that people could connect to and, you know, call upon their own experiences and sort of explain that through the song. So.
Yeah, it must be incredible to have somebody like that, especially when you were almost taking a step back from music to pursue an academic kind of career path. And then for him to kind of bring you in and be like, listen, I hear something in you. There's something that's there. Like, you can do this if you want to. It's
totally. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice to have someone to kind of push you to that instead of take maybe the safe route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's like the Lady Gaga meme where she's like, I don't know. It's like different cuts of her being like, it only takes like one, or, you know, like, you have like thousands of people say no and you have one. And like, you know, but the sentiment is like really true. You know, it's like if you have this little kind of spark of interest inside of you, but it's sort of been like dimmed for whatever reason, right? Like people get rejected all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to continue if you feel like you don't have people or something that's sort of driving you towards that goal. And I think, you know, I had this feeling and I had this love and this passion for it, but I didn't know where to even start, you know.
Okay.
When you're at square one, you're like, how do I do music as a job? It's like such a like vastly insane question.
Mm-hmm.
Because the journey is so long and, you know, taking that one step is really insane. And having somebody who like has that experience and who has, you know, merit and who, you know, believed in me, that really meant so much to me, being like 17 in another state and not knowing anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That meant more to me than like almost anything. So yeah, I really owe a lot to him, and like his wife too, Amy. She is so amazing. Like, I spent so many nights at their house, like having dinner. Like, they just, you know, welcomed me over and had dinner and just like encouraged me to keep going. And they're both were really, they both were really just a pivotal part of my Texas experience. So
it's really nice. Yeah. Especially moving from Connecticut to Texas. That must have been scary.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah. I mean, everything's bigger in Texas for real. I definitely learned that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So preparing for this, I was just listening to your discography, and I've had Back to the Beginning stuck in my head for like the last 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is. Maybe you can tell me, but just like the opening guitar, it feels like a warm hug. Is there anything that like, maybe the question I'm trying to ask is, what is your process when you're writing songs? Is it melodies first, or do you write before you start like the process and be like, oh, maybe I can fit something here that might fit the lyrics, like the melody would match the lyrics? So what is that like process like for you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Back to the Beginning was I wrote that song so quickly. And normally my process, it takes a while for me. But, you know, I think at the time, normally what I do is I'll have some sort of like chord progression or melody that I like, and I'll just kind of sing it over and over and over again. And I'll have some rhythmic idea of what I want the words to be, but I'll just usually like make it up, you know? And I think when you sing it over and over again, like the sounds kind of morph into something. And, you know, once I had this general kind of idea for the verse, the rest of the song just sort of flowed out. But normally I don't write that quickly, but I felt like that song came to me like so fast. And, you know, I'd written it and I showed it to Charles Myers, who produced the record.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of built off of that idea that I had originally. And like that guitar intro was his idea, kind of about like starting just with the acoustic and building all the instrumentation around it. But we really worked together on that song and to kind of build it out into this very cinematic, like emotional piece. And then when we had done the Tiny Desk, that also sort of informed a lot of the arrangement, because I knew I wanted horns.
Mm-hmm.
On that. And I had my really good friends, Greg Carlton and, John Cushing's on it. And yeah, a lot of the instrumentation kind of was built around that too. But yeah, it was, I think it just sort of came to me very quickly, which is not normally my process.
Because I know with certain people, with Elton John and I know his name. It's at the tip of my tongue. Elton John and the guy Bernie Taupin.
Yes.
He would write lyrics. He would find melody. Taupin would find or write lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting that with different artists, you kind of get a different perspective on how people write music. Like John Bellion doesn't really write lyrics down until they hit him. Like he'll play songs. And I don't know if you've watched any of the making of his songs.
I have, yeah.
The making of Guillotine is one of my favorite videos ever.
Mm.
But yeah, I really like that it's different for everybody. And gathering different life experience to write songs that either flow out of you or you take like years to write a certain song, but it's exactly the way you want it. I think that's really, really interesting.
Totally. I think like what I've gathered from speaking with a lot of people and writing myself and watching all these movies and podcasts and, you know, interviews and stuff like that is just not hindering the flow of something. And you can have an idea that stays with you for ever and not get to it until years later. But I think the thing that I noticed with this song particularly was I had this idea. And I think, you know, my voice feels like my strong suit, and that's kind of what I normally rely on in terms of my songwriting. And I think I just decided to have fun with it. And I don't think it's a very like conventional vocal melody. It's sort of like wispy and, you know, a little bit all over the place. But I had fun singing it. And I think in that process, I was like, how do I have fun with this while creating something that feels memorable and interesting? And, you know, when I sat down to write that song, I was like, I'm going to finish this section in this moment. And so, you know, everybody has their own process, but I feel like what I've found is trying to quiet like this inner judgment and just write from a place of like joy. And so that was kind of what I was trying to do in the moment. Yeah.
Nice. When did you like find your voice? Because I know it's obviously different for everyone. Like you listen to artists like earlier stuff, you're like, that's not what they sound like. Now it looks like they finally found their voice. Was there a moment that like clicked for you where you like you find out where the octave you should sit like is? Or
I honestly don't think I'm like consciously aware of that, but it's through like just years of like gigging and writing. And I would say like live performance for me was such a big part in finding how I wanted to sound. Because I've done so many different ways. Like I started off in the city, like gigging by West 4th, you know, when it was just me and my friend. Like he was playing guitar, I was doing vocals. And then, you know, I've done iterations where it's just me, and that's a very different experience. And then, you know, finally putting together like a full band and then stripping it down and having like pedal steel and bass and guitar. And, you know, I think I knew that in all those different versions, I knew that, you know, playing an instrument and having that was a really important part of my live performance. And what I wanted, like, my image to be and, like, my musical experience to be. But I don't know if I ever remember, like, a conscious moment. I think it's just the culmination of, like, all these little moments that have made me now. But I still also feel like I'm figuring myself out, too. Like, I think, you know, I'm working on an album right now. And these songs are going to sound, like, very different from what, you know, these batch of songs coming out now sound like. So
interesting.
Yeah. So it's very, I think what I'm just trying to do is have fun and enjoy making music. And I think now more so than ever, there's such a lack of structure with genre that you can just kind of have fun. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like deep down what feels right to you. And so I'm just trying to pay attention to that when I'm writing. You know, if I create something and I'm like, oh, this really like feels cool and interesting to me, or I write something and I'm like, like, you know, maybe there's something here, but it's not going to be it, you know.
Mm-hmm. When I saw you at Women Who Rock in Brooklyn Bowl, you got on the piano, and I'm curious to know, with the new album coming out, I'm not going to ask you when, I don't want you to spoil that for anybody. Are we going to expect more like piano arrangements, or are we going to get more upbeat, like high fidelity, or what are you leaning more towards? Like, what should we expect, more upbeat or slower?
I've been thinking a lot about this. I think, you know, yeah.
Without giving away too much.
I've performed quite a bit these past couple years, like in the city. But, you know, I think going to South By this past year, it taught me a lot about performance, because it was multiple days in a row, like the unofficial shows and whatever. And it was a very new experience, because I was playing a lot and like frequently in the city, but it wasn't every day. And being, you know, in a city where I was playing every day in a new venue, it taught me a lot about myself and what I like and what I want. And I'm feeling in a place of like, I want to have fun when I'm performing. Okay. I saw this interview with Chappell Roan where she was talking.
She's so good.
She's amazing. I'm obviously obsessed, as is the rest of the world right now.
The world.
I saw this interview with her, and I was listening to like her older stuff, and it's good, but it's like very down tempo. It's very different from what the, you know, like the rise and fall of a Midwest princess,
to the level a million that we see every performance.
Yeah, exactly. And she was talking about it, and she was like, I was going on tour and I was playing these sad songs, and I was feeling really sad, like singing them, because it was bringing me back to that place. Mm-hmm. And Napalm says this too of Hiatus Coyote. She talks about how she never wants to write from a place of like deep sadness, because every time she performs, it like brings her back to that moment. And she wants to be in a space of like reflection, I guess, or like having overcome that feeling. Because when you perform every day, it's like you're being called to experience that again and again when you're singing it. And, you know, I think I feel that I want to be in a moment of having fun and enjoying, you know, when I'm on stage, because, you know, playing like High Fidelity, I have so much fun playing that all the time. Like,
it looks like it.
It's such a fun song. And like, I love, you know, jamming out with the band. And, you know, same with Play Pretend. Like, that's one of my favorite parts, ending the show, where like I get to jump around and just like expel all this energy and like adrenaline that I've been feeling throughout the show. And so I think I want a lot of these songs to reflect that joy. There are definitely some songs coming up that I'm releasing that are like way more ballady and stuff like that. And I think it's a balance, you know, you want to have both of those, but like, I'm in a space writing now, at least, where I'm like, I want to have fun. And like, yeah, I want to produce something that could last me an entire tour, and I wouldn't be sick of playing it, you know, by the end of it.
Are there any songs now, not to put you on the spot, that you're like, I really have to play this again?
Well,
be as honest as you want to be.
I sort of like feel that way about a lot of my songs, just because, not because I'm not proud of them anymore. Like, I feel really proud of all the songs that I've ever written. And like, they're, like, they're special to me. They're really special. And so I'll never forget that. I think, you know, having gigged on these songs for a really long time and, you know, even before I released them, which wasn't that long ago, like, I've been gigging on these songs for 2 years, you know, and that was the same too, going back to Chapel. Like, she wrote Pink Pony Club in 2020. Like, yeah, she has got time. To be so sick of playing that song, I imagine. I mean, it's a great song, obviously, but, like, you know, playing this song for 4 years without really having, I mean, I'm sure she has, you know, a whole, like, arsenal of songs that she's just waiting to release, but I think it's really hard as a musician to be playing the same songs. And, like, Paul McCartney always says this. He's like, people go to your shows to hear it like the record. And so you have to be conscious about, like, I think, you know, honoring that side of it too. Like, you can do different arrangements, and but people, like, they listen to the record all the time. Like, if you vary too much from it, I think it's hard for people to enjoy in that communal experience with you. So
I really wonder how he felt about Amy Winehouse, because none of her performances sounded the same as the record.
Yeah, I mean, Amy's very different because she feels like more an improvisational artist.
Yeah, very jazzy improv.
Yes. So, like, sense. People are going for the experience of her, I think. I mean, the songs are amazing, yeah. But, like, also people are like, her voice is insane.
That's my girl.
Yeah.
Her voice is insane. Yeah, I don't know. I would be curious to see, like, how much she varies from the record. Like, are they completely different arrangements? Or it's more just so, like, vocal improv?
It's, like, vocal improv. I feel like the arrangements are the same. But there's songs that she'll perform, even with Valerie. Like, she'll either scat on a, like, a certain part of it or...
Totally.
Do stuff like that.
That I understand. I'm just thinking, like... Like, people want to sing with you, right? Like,
yeah.
So, for example, in Back to Black, like, everybody wants to do, like, we only said goodbye. You know?
Yeah,
like, people want to
like
be a part
thing.
Of that.
Yeah.
And I think there definitely is a balance when you're performing, right? It's like, you know, stay true to your artistic integrity, but also, like,
keep it fresh.
Yeah, I guess, like, and, you know, creating an experience that everybody can partake with you. Like, I feel like that was Queen's whole thing, right? Like, they did We Will Rock You because they wanted, like, a chanty thing that everybody could be a part of. And so I think, I forgot my original thing. Oh, songs of mine that I hate.
Yes.
I completely diverged.
Like,
but
again, be as honest as you want.
So, like, during South By, we had, like, Worst Enemy is actually one of my favorite songs, like, production-wise, because it felt so different from all the other songs that we did. And I think it relied heavily on production and this, like, sonic world that Charles and I created. And there's so many background vocals. There's so many, like, hidden gems in that, like, crazy, like, vocal ad-libs. And so I love that song, like, production-wise. But when we play it live, like, we can just, I feel like the band, we just never lock in. So we were just like, we're not going to play this anymore. We're like,
everyone just came to an agreement. Like,
yeah, we were all like,
forget that one.
We just shouldn't play this anymore. And I was like, okay, yeah.
They were saying what you were thinking?
Kind of. Like,
okay.
I just knew that, you know, it's like a feeling that you have with your band. It's like when things lock in and, you know, there's a magic moment. And I felt like we had played it a couple of times and it was just not getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, right now we're just not going to figure this out. So we're going to table this. And yeah. But I think, like, for the amount of times that I've played these songs, I think I'm still always able to find joy in performing them. And, like, I find, like, a new fun experience. And it was interesting because, you know, being in Texas, and it was like we had this week of performances. We did, like, 6 shows while we were there.
And how many days?
In, like, 5 days.
Jesus
it
Christ.
Was so crazy.
That's definitely not something you're used to.
Oh, I was so tired by the end of it. It was also funny because, like, we were trying to cut costs. So I ended up, like, splitting my band with another, like, really awesome artist. Her name is Bex.
PAX. Oh, she was at, what's it called? She was at the same show that you were at. Yeah.
Actually, that's where, we ended up meeting there. But, yeah, she hit me up and was like, you know, I'm, like, looking for a band and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I know you're already heading down there. So we ended up, like, splitting the band. And then, so I think the boys had, like, I want to say, like, 4 shows on their last day. And then,
oh my God,
we had our flight at like 5 a.m. and we rented a car. So we basically just didn't go to sleep. We like stayed up. And I stayed at a friend's house who lives in Austin. Like, he was amazing. His name is Jake. And he, like, we've kept in touch. He's an amazing, entertainment lawyer and just really smart and had just moved to Austin. And he was like, do you want a place to stay? And so basically we were spending that last night at his, like, like slapping ourselves awake on the couch, like trying to like hold our eyes open. And then we left at 3 a.m. to return the car and then flew out at like 5. And it was crazy, but, sorry, I diverged again, but, you know, I played Remember Me for a long time at that point. And like being in Austin and singing that song, I think I just, like, I felt so emotional. Mm. I think it was, like, a combination of the exhaustion, but also, too, just being in the place where, you know, Gary is and, like, having that, like, emotional experience way into the performance. I felt myself, like, getting, like, the most emotional that I had ever been singing that song. So it's interesting. Like, I don't know. They're just, every performance is really different. There's some that are really great and some that aren't, but I think overall I feel happy about playing the songs and I feel proud of them. And yeah.
Got it. So worst enemy, least favorite song you've ever performed. Can't get it to work with the band.
Yeah. I mean, I have songs also too on like my first EP that I released with Will Rosati, and he's like an amazing producer and great friend. And, you know, sometimes like I'll whip out some songs from there and that feels like really interesting coming back to them like 3-4 years later after they released. And, you know, I think I see a lot of how like my songwriting has grown, and but also too, like, I have a huge soft spot like for all those songs and for Will especially, and believing in me during that time when I like was like, okay, I want to write a record. Like, how do I do that? Mm-hmm. You know? So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Did you think about a song that you want to perform?
I mean, I thought I would just do Play Pretend because it's coming out tomorrow. So.
All right. We're going to do that.
Okay.
Is it cool if I wrap it up here?
Of course. Yeah.
All right. This has been Behind the Artist with Will Borowski. I am so lucky to be joined by the lovely Rachel Rose. She is incredible. Been a fan of you since, I don't know, since you popped up on Instagram.
Thank you, Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram's been doing the thing. I saw on, just to wrap this up, on the Play Pretend video, the live video, I would scroll through the comments and they would be like, oh, we saw this like on an ad, and it takes me like a few seconds to like draw me into an ad, and it seemed like it worked because there's been, I think there's like 90,000 views on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, I mean, it's just me working here, you know. I don't have like any crazy team behind me. I have like a few trusted people that I bring into the fold and they help me, like Julian Brooks. Like, he directed the video and filmed and edited and everything. And
I meant to ask you about him.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah. He's amazing. And then the whole band, like Neil Rosenthal, Franco Vittore, Leo Yucht, Josh Uguccini, like having all of them there. Ross Mayfield, like he did the engineering, at GB Jukes. But, yeah, I mean, it's just me. And I was like, I don't know, I guess ads are the thing that you have to do these days. So I watched a couple of YouTube videos, asked a couple of friends about it. And I was like, okay, like, you know, I'll throw in a little bit of cash into this and see what happens. And I think people were really nice about it. I don't know. Like,
what did you expect people to be like? Oh, get this out of here.
There was actually like, I posted a YouTube like reels about, I think about like a segment of the video, and like YouTube just has haters. I feel it's the same with Twitter a little bit, but like,
I've been off Twitter for years now. It's the most liberating experience of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like once you tap into a certain part of YouTube, like, people are there to support you. It's like, you know, like Charlie Puth is there. Like, you know, like all these people were discovered on YouTube. And I love like long form video, which is why like I love working with Julian so much, because we really just like we're like millennial people. Like, you know, we grew up in the age of YouTube, and like we love YouTube videos, and like, he'll text me all the time being like, I just saw this insane YouTube video, like, or music video. Like, let's like figure out something. And, you know, he's just amazing with that stuff and has such an eye, just for beautiful images and cinematography and stuff. But, yeah, so I posted the YouTube reel. And I'm pretty sure like people were like, okay, like next or something like that. And there was one guy who was like, how dare you ever assume that I don't have my life down? Like, I have my life down completely. Like, why don't you come back to me when you like write a better song or something like that? And I was like, yikes.
That sounds like someone who doesn't really have it.
Yeah. Doesn't really have it down. Figures. Yeah. I should have like taken a photo of that and just like,
that should have been the thumbnail for the song.
Something like that. But yeah, I don't know. The whole social media game is tough. I don't know how good at it I am, but
it's so brutal.
I think it's like, you know, I'm trying to get, it's like you're competing with like
the best of the best.
The best of the best, and also to like, you know, animal like videos and like baby videos and like all this shit, the best know, on of the TikTok best. Yeah. And like, right. So I'm like, any chance to get it out there somewhere, somehow, in, you know, and be at the right place at the right time for somebody to hear it is what I think I'm trying to do. So, you know, put some ads on there. I'm caught. But I don't know. I guess people liked it. So we'll see.
It worked. I think it worked. All right. But we're going to get into the performance.
Yeah.
Cool. Down.
pretend.